bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me up.
Support for In the Garden comes from The Flower Farm, offering fresh flower bouquet subscriptions, perennials, soils, and amendments, shade and black ground cloth, and now featuring season-end blooming roses. Island Flowers open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato.
Good afternoon, and welcome to KFSK's In the Garden. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. And with me on the line, all the way from Juneau, California traveling man and master gardener extraordinaire, Ed Byarski. Welcome, Ed.
Hi there, Mindy.
How are you today?
That was an interesting introduction, but yes. it fits.
Yes, you have been traveling.
Yes, we have. It sure is nice to be back in this lush green land of ours.
How is our California produce, fruit, and veggies coming along down there?
If for those folks, for those farmers or gardeners who have water, not bad. I mean, certainly, as usual, they've got heat, you know, even more heat than usual. We felt some of that over the past week, you know, from, you know, highs from 99 to 108. But I didn't feel 108. It left. It got that hot the day we left. We got out of there in the nick of time. It did cool off pretty well at night down into the low 60s, so that was pleasant, more pleasant.
Right, yeah, that the low 60s, that's the kind of weather I like, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's about the highs. Of course, it's, what is it here, 52 degrees at the moment here, so that's okay. We enjoy the rain, and I know talking to folks down there, they're saying, boy, they wish they could have some of this stuff. So we're incredibly fortunate, and I guess what it really, you know, to some extent tells us is that we need to be growing more of our own produce to, you know, to fill our root cellars, our freezers, our refrigerators, and all of that sort of thing, because more than likely prices are going to go up on produce. And, well, they raise a lot of cattle for milk and meat, too. So all of that's going to be affected.
Sure, sure. Did you have any highlights on your trip down there, checking out vineyards or picking certain fruit? What was one of your favorites?
Oh, yeah, we did all of that, plus we had a great time with our grandsons, which is the main reason we go down there. But then I keep my eyes open, and I'm teaching at least my oldest grandson, who's 7, and he can spot a fig tree from quite a distance driving down the road. And so we did find several beautiful fig trees, and they've got one in their backyard that we planted a few years ago that has green figs, which were ripe, and we picked a bunch of those. And we found a huge black fig tree that we picked probably 20 pounds of that were incredibly tasty, the first crop getting ripe, and there'll be a second and probably a third crop from them. And these are, at least the black fig was unwatered, you know, it's not getting any water other than what its roots can pull up from down deep, I assume.
Sure.
And talking to the folks who live there, they've got a well, they're on a, you know, they're kind of a edge of town situation. So they're on a well that does grow dry, so they have to haul water at least for drinking. But my son is, and family, after their baths and showers with a tub drain plug, they then bucket the water out to water the fig tree and a couple of pear trees and an avocado that we planted all of those because they've lived there. Now, they do have a huge plum tree that has nice, great red flesh plums that are just starting to ripen. That one does not get any water, and it is loaded again with plums. And we picked maybe 20 pounds of those and brought back with us to make some plum jam and stuff, too. So that blackberries, the wild blackberries, are starting to get ripe, and they're kind of a pest in most places, but they're also tasty. You know, as far as weeds go, they're one of the tastier ones.
Sure.
So we enjoyed all of that, plus playing with the kids. and just looking at the neighborhoods, and they are under severe water restrictions. So a lot of folks have pretty much given up on their lawns, at least in the neighborhood. Their neighbor has put in a sod lawn maybe 5 years ago, which used to look beautiful, you know. And, you know, I'd go over there, you just kind of feel it because it felt so good. Oh, I never did walk on it barefoot. But it is brown.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
This is certainly going to tell what, you know, what will survive when there isn't the water. You know, what trees will survive, and shrubbery, ornamentals, all that stuff. So folks have to make choices and see what they can do with what water they have. Some places are paying for people with lawns to remove them, you know, replace them with xeriscaping or similar. But my son, I can't really call it a lawn. He doesn't have anything that looks enough like a lawn to be paid to remove it.
So it just goes dry. His lawn goes dry too. Whatever he has, weeds.
Yeah, I mean, it's weeds. It's basically weeds. You know, I weed whack it a couple times in the summer, and that's about it.
Uh-huh.
But you can see which weeds are tough also down there. It's pretty incredible some of the stuff that does survive. And one of the things that is surviving well are fennel. There's wild fennel. And we've seen that in much of California from San Diego north. And so these huge fennel plants, they've got one that's sprouted there that's 8 to 9 feet tall and 5 to 6 feet wide. And it's beautiful stuff. Very fine, feathery leaves. You know, like dill, or like fennel if people grow it up here. I know some do.
Mm-hmm.
And we picked a lot of the flower heads to use to dry for use in, I'll use the fennel pollen along with fennel seeds in making Italian sausage and stuff.
And right, yeah.
It can be used in other dishes, too. So it's very interesting walking around the neighborhoods and just seeing what things look like and what people are choosing to keep alive, essentially.
And then there's here. Everything's just going crazy. I just planted seeds, and it was a day and a half, 2 days, I planted some lettuce seeds, and already the sprouts are up.
I know. Last week, before we left, I think it was on either Tuesday or Wednesday, I planted peas, kale, and cilantro. And, you know, uncovered it yesterday, and it's all sprouting and growing. So we're looking forward to the new crop, and I need to plant more lettuce because lettuce is coming on strong right now, as is Swiss chard and kale and edible pod peas. Potatoes are flowering. And carrots look good. I was actually eating a few carrot thinnings last night out of the garden. And the first, amazingly enough, picked a few ripe raspberries yesterday at my neighbor's place. I've never seen anything this early already. So it's going to be tremendous.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about thinning your carrots. When you thin your carrots, obviously, you're pulling them out rather than like just cutting off the tops, do you pull them out completely?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, you know, that's been a long time, but this year I did buy, for planting lettuce, I bought some pelleted seed. And I mean, I'm pretty much a sprinkle the seeds in there and then thin them out as we go.
Uh-huh.
So I am thinning, you know, in the regular lettuce that wasn't the pelleted stuff, so they got easier to handle, you know, larger seed balls, essentially, with clay. Those are nicely spread, where the normal lettuce needs thinning. So we've been cutting those out, too, and eating the thinning. So I'm going to probably be working on more. The pelleted seed is more expensive.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But particularly for folks who use a cedar, you know, one of the little, you can buy these little very
I've never used one.
Spread things out, and so overall you end up, you know, well, you waste fewer seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So potentially if you've got a good cedar, and particularly for market gardeners or something like that, you know, you can spread them out at the beginning, and then there's just that much less thinning. So that's a plus. So something worth thinking about, and having seen the difference in my garden, I plan to do more of that. I have a friend of mine, you know, years ago back in Sitka, had a board with holes drilled geometrically perfect, 1 inch apart, you know, measured in all diagonals for planting his carrots. And so he would drop seeds through, you know, one seed per hole through this. And he had the most geometrically perfect carrot patch. So, again, he didn't have to do the thinning and, again, use less seeds. So that's, you know, which saves us time, certainly in the garden where we've got, we're a busy bunch and want to be doing other stuff or working our way along. So that really does help if you've got a seeder or some other gadget that you might use to carefully space the seeds as you go.
And seeds are not cheap. I mean, I've ordered from Territorial, and recently I was just mentioning to you this morning, I made an order from Territorial because they sold me on some fall crops, some fall purple crops, and I ordered, and it wasn't cheap. So, yeah,
it
you want to save your seeds.
You know, but again, when you think ahead to the produce that you get from a packet of seeds, you know, a packet of lettuce seed, which probably, you know, these days is costing us maybe $3 to $4 a packet. And, I mean, if you could manage to eat all that lettuce, I mean, you would get hundreds of heads or bunches of lettuce from that stuff. So, still, seeds are not the, you know, most expensive part of the gardening, the whole gardening experience, I think. And it's definitely worth having good quality seed for that reason.
And it's not too late to plant. Just like we were mentioning, you can still pick up a package of lettuce and plant it, maybe some late beets, fall beets. But
I think with the weather we have, nice warm soil we have, I think planting beets now would be just fine. Again, looking at seed packets and how long it takes to mature, you know, when we planted our first beets way back in, well, March, April, or early May, or mid-May, perhaps, that, especially going into the cold soil, there we're always talking about everything we can do to warm the soil. Well, now the soil is quite warm, and certainly if you still have hoops over the top of things, and it's just that much warmer. I mean, my beans, I've got beans which will be flowering in the next week, and just over at a friend's place, and he's got beans that are ahead of mine. His are flowering now, so... And it only takes a week or 2 weeks from bean flowers to beans. Same thing with peas. So it's looking really good at this point.
I want to remind folks that if they would like to call in the garden and ask a question, they can certainly do that. 772-3808 is the number, or 888-772-3808. Here is a question from someone who called, I think it was toward the end of last week. Maybe it was even on Monday, but she has a maple tree. It's 30 feet tall, and all of the seeds, the little part that would germinate, have turned black. Do you have any idea what that could be?
Boy, I do not. That sounds interesting and different. Again, that's a question for either talk to somebody with the Forest Service, you know, who, and some of those, because there is the Forest Science Lab in Juneau.
Okay.
That they may be able to refer, you know, a question like that on to someone else. The Cooperative Extension Service, unfortunately, has no pest and disease specialist in Juneau this year because of budget cutbacks. So, but again, if you call the Extension, and they may be able to refer you on to somebody up north, perhaps.
Okay.
See about what's, you know, if they can come up with something. But that's not something I've heard of before.
And for those of you who are listening, so this is the maple tree at the bookstore. So if anyone else here knows about the maple trees, if you can stop over there, check the maple tree out, but and let Nancy know if you know of anything about this. So.
Interesting, yeah. Otherwise, trees look good, I mean, around here. Fungus diseases are relatively low, except for I've seen a fair amount of powdery mildew on some stuff. And it's interesting because some of it seems like, particularly on plants that have come up this summer, where and I've seen this in the past years too, that we'll get trees and shrubs will get powdery mildew and some other issues also the first season they are here. But then, assuming they survive all of that, the next year usually is not a problem. At least that's been my experience. And this year I have seen it particularly on ninebarks, Diablo or Summer Wine ninebark.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something to kind of take notice of and see. I did on these plants that we plant a couple at our house. I need to check back because before we left, again, I mixed up the baking soda spray that we recommend and sprayed it on them. I mean, immediately, and baking soda kills mildew pretty much on contact. So that's if you're having that problem, that's an easy spray to mix up. A quart of water in a sprayer with a teaspoon or two of baking soda and a couple drops of liquid soap. Shake it, keep shaking it, and spray it. And essentially, it's the alkalinity of the solution which is killing the mildew. And you can use the same stuff. You can use the same stuff in your bathroom, as far as that goes. If you've got mildew growing on tiles and that sort of thing, for cleaning, a nice, safe, cheap cleaning solution.
The couple trees that I got from you are doing well. I think I'm watering them enough. I'm watering them, yeah, a lot, even though it is raining a little bit. What about somebody who possibly didn't water their tree enough or trees enough during May when it was very, very dry and then all of a sudden noticed, oh, this tree isn't doing that great. I'm going to start giving it, 20 gallons of water a day. Is it too late for that tree? It's probably on a per tree basis, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, 20 gallons is rather a lot.
Yeah.
But still, having consistent moisture is what we're aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be even some of where last year's trees, of course, we had so much rainfall, we didn't have to water after the 1st of June. But this year, things are different. And if you see a tree in distress, what people should not do is fertilize it.
Okay.
That's one of the main things is don't give it fertilizer if it's in distress, but just work on the water part.
Okay.
And hope for the best. And what happens is trees, maple trees or others, catsuras and different ones, usually will have that first spring flush of growth, and we'll see it in those trees that we bring up here particularly.
Mm-hmm.
They're fully leafed out in April, and then they kind of stop growing. And then, but they're still, I mean, roots are still growing, of course, at the same time. But then they usually will get a second flush of growth in midsummer, about now.
Okay.
So hopefully for these trees, like you mentioned, if some of those have been stressed, the initial response to stress is sometimes very often to, leaves turn brown or maybe drop off. And then hopefully you get some moisture, then they will grow a new batch of leaves. And the key there is hoping that we have good weather so that the leaves can mature, they can take in the energy from the sun and store carbohydrates in the roots for next year. And what I've seen in places, if we get a marginal year like last summer where it was cold and wet, that some trees don't save or store that much food. And particularly with fruit trees, and I'm seeing this on my own trees, that last year we had a pretty good fruit crop, which helped from the year before, which was better. And this year I have a very poor fruit crop, few cherries, few apples. Even though, the trees were covered with blossoms this spring, I have less fruit this year than previous years.
Mm.
So that's the other effect that the tree knows it cannot mature that fruit, so they fall off. I mean, it drops its fruit to protect itself so that it can keep growing and survive, essentially, till next year. So, again, with the good weather we're having this year, should be storing lots of nutrients for next year, assuming it's got enough water to keep growing also.
Ed, it looks like we have a question. We have a caller here on line one. Welcome to In the Garden.
Hi, thank you. I have a peony bush that has many, many buds on, but they all turn black when they're tiny. And I have a couple that have gotten the size of a walnut, but all the petals that should be a color are an ugly brown, like they're almost rotten or something.
You know, and again, this peonies are definitely susceptible to, we were talking about fungus issues, and it's very definitely a fungus issue. I mean, it's commonly called botrytis. And again, I mentioned the baking soda spray earlier. That is certainly an appropriate spray to use. I mean, by this time, of course, we aren't going to get new flowers for this year. But we can use that this year to spray on the leaves, remove, go ahead and pinch off or cut off those buds so that they don't act as a reinfection point. You know, the fungus is in there, remove those. And if you look at leaves also, you may very well see the curled, distorted, brown or black leaves too. Again, pinch those off at the same time. And then just kind of, whether you put on your calendar for next year, that just look at spraying that same stuff on them, you know, maybe once a week or every 2 weeks, once they leaf out back in early to mid-May, to try to reduce that problem. Clean up underneath the bushes this summer and fall so you don't leave the old leaves there, and cut down the stems in late summer or early fall. And you can even, to help keep the fungus spores from being splashed back up onto the new leaves next year, you can even, after you do your fall cleanup, if you have access to some sand, that you could put a little, just a half inch layer of sand around the base of the plant, then that will help cover up the spores that are in the ground that the rain would normally splash up, and then you can keep them just that much healthier and have less of an issue with, hopefully less of an issue next year, assuming we have a decent year. Most peonies are doing pretty well, but some, it seems like some varieties are more susceptible to this than others, I've noticed.
Okay. How much baking soda to water?
In a quart sprayer, one or two teaspoons. You know, if you're doing a gallon, then you're looking at a couple of tablespoons.
Okay.
Two, maybe three tablespoons, and just a couple drops of liquid soap, and you've got to keep shaking it.
Okay.
The baking soda tends to settle out to the bottom, so you got to keep shaking it to get it to partially dissolve.
Okay.
And so that you can spray it out. But,
okay.
You know, hit them now a couple times. But, yeah, definitely, you know, mark down on your calendar for next year to start once they're up there 6 inches tall or so. Give them, you know, maybe once every week or 2 weeks to help on that also.
Okay. Now, it's right next to another peony bush. Will it spread?
Yeah. Oh, well, potentially. Again, depending, like I said, some varieties get it much worse than others. But, yeah, that's the same thing. You know, do the same thing on all your peony.
Okay.
You know, do the cleanup, do the, you know, spray them also.
Okay,
is worthwhile.
They're blooming and beautiful.
And all of the cleanup work definitely helps. And,
okay.
Again, you know, look at liming. You know, we talk about peonies like lime, like sweet soil. So give them some lime also.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
772-3808 or 888-772-3808 is the number to call. And anything special we should be doing in the greenhouse or garden at this time? Maintenance?
Oh, in the greenhouse, definitely. The last 2 days since I got back, I've been pinching on the tomatoes to remove all that extra growth. As usual, I planted too many tomatoes in the space that I have. They're so small when you first plant them. And I've got 30 tomato plants in a 3 foot by 30 foot bed, and I should have about 20, you know, and that's just the way it is. And try to remind myself and make a big note, maybe right on the wall there, to do that. So again, I mean, it's pretty much a mass of green. So now I'm starting to pinch out lower leaves, trying to make sure I've got ventilation in there. I'm pinching out the suckers, the little side shoots that are forming at the base of the leaves, and I've got lots of green tomatoes in there so far. I'm doing the same thing on cucumbers too. I'm also, because they do the same thing. They have these extra shoots that come off in between, you know, at each leaf, and I'm removing some of those too for the same reason, to give me extra air circulation. And again, that way the energy of the plant is going into really overall less vegetative growth and hopefully more cucumbers that are blooming now. And I was out there, again, removing the faded flowers from the cucumbers so that fungus disease, again, doesn't infect the dying flower and then go into the cucumbers. And hopefully things are looking good. Two or three weeks from now, we should be eating cucumbers, the first ones of those. And even my Minnesota midget muskmelons are flowering now. So I've got those trellised hanging on strings, and I have great hopes for those maybe a month, maybe 6 weeks from now. If I can get some of those in mid-August, I'll be very pleased.
Okay. I think we might have a call. Let me see here. A caller on line one, welcome to In the Garden.
Hi.
Hi.
I got a question about rhubarb.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, a lot of the leaves on the rhubarb turned crimson red.
Okay, just a second. If you have your radio on, why don't you turn it down?
Okay.
And then we can hear you better.
All right. Yeah, the stalks turned, got mushy and died out, and the leaves turned really red. And I dug out part of the roots, and they were rotten. And you go on the internet, and it sounds pretty dire, but I dug out a bunch of it, and I haven't had any more turn green now for a couple weeks. So do you know anything about that red leaf on rhubarb?
Boy, I don't. I mean, normally that's, you know, typically it... rhubarb does turn red leaves as it ages in the late summer and fall. And again, normally it's just about the toughest plant around. If anything's going to survive on an old homestead, it's going likely to be rhubarb. So I don't know. And you mentioned about apparently the roots were also rotten. Is that right?
Yeah, it seemed like they were pretty mushy and almost runny. Rhubarb roots, when you break them open and everything, they're not exactly... all that fresh, and they don't look like any kind of turnip
right.
or anything.
Yep.
They're pretty spongy brown.
Okay.
But
wouldn't
this
you,
was
why don't you give... Well, actually, here. Let me grab getting something to write. I am going to... If you can give me a phone number or an email, and I actually know the rhubarb researcher up in the Matsu Valley, and I can try to refer you to him and see if he can give you some suggestions on that. As far as what's happening.
Okay, Ed, thanks. This is Jim Schramick. You know me, and I'm at 518-1130.
1130, did you say?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, and tell me again your last name?
Schramick.
Oh, yes. Oh, sure. Okay, good enough. I will refer you on to a fellow up north. He actually went to school with my wife long ago and far away. And he's maintaining, I forget what he said, 300 varieties of rhubarb.
That's amazing.
Up there. I mean, so this is, apparently they have National Collection of Rhubarb, no less. And everything from wild species from China, which grow, some of these that only grow 2 inches tall, 2 to 3 inches tall and across, and that are at high elevations. And then there's other stuff that grows much larger than that, as well as cultivated varieties. So I will try to refer you on and, see if the two of you can get together and talk about this.
Okay, thanks, Ed.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks for calling,
bye.
Jim.
All right, bye.
Okay, Ed, it's about 11 minutes after 3, and I think we've taken up quite a bit of your valuable time. I know you're busy today.
Time to get home and get back to gardening, yes. At least I don't have to water the garden. That's a plus.
Exactly. Maybe you can be inside in the greenhouse doing something today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And picking some more fresh produce for wonderful salads and all the rest of that, and dreaming about all the raspberries and blackberries and stuff that are starting to ripen.
And for those listening, we're still looking for folks who would let us and some others tour your greenhouses and gardens mid-August. We have a few people who have signed up, so we're excited about that. You don't need to worry about everything looking pristine. It's kind of a learning adventure for everybody, and we'd love to have you on the garden tour. So you can call us here.
That'll be fun.
772-3808, or you can email Mindy at kfsk.org. And once we get everything scheduled, we'll let you know about workshops and things like that, too, when Ed comes for a visit.
And if folks have particular interest in something they'd like me to talk about or to look at in their gardens, too, you know, you can, again, let you know what do they want. Yeah, what do we want to discuss?
That sounds good. Okay, Ed, thank you, and we'll talk to you next week on, for In the Garden.
All right.
Take
sounds
care.
Good.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a heart.
Support for In the Garden comes from The Flower Farm, offering fresh flower bouquet subscriptions, perennials, soils, and amendments, shade and black ground cloth, and now featuring season-end blooming roses. Island Flowers open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.
And that's true love.
And once again, thanks to Ed Byarski for taking time out of his gardening day to join us for In the Gardens most Thursdays in the summer. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, have fun in the garden. Enjoy your fresh veggies.
With eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.